In the first memoir by a member of the band Journey, keyboardist and songwriter Jonathan Cain shares his story as well as behind-the-scenes details of his 36-year career with one of America's favorite rock bands. The new book is Don't Stop Believin', The Man, The Band, and the Song That Inspired Generations. The book is out now, a memoir, and it coincides with the summer tour with Def Leppard, which comes to the Times Union Center in Albany tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
A singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night, it goes on and on.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Jonathan Cain to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joe. It's good to be with you, sir.
Very nice to have you on the program. It's hard to believe it's been 36 years, but does it feel that long to you? I'm not sure.
Actually, 37. And if you want to count the year I toured with Journey, it'd be 38. That's when I first met those guys when I was in a band called The Babies. We were opening up for Journey. They were making a live album, Captured, and they picked us to be the opening act with John Waite, of course, The Babies on Chrysalis. And it seems like a couple lifetimes ago, but, you know, the journey to Journey, when I look back on it, it surely was a journey. I felt like Frodo for a while, you know, <the Hobbit. laughs> you know, and Gandalf shows up and says, "Hey, I know about this band called Journey."
You never really went through a down period where you weren't out and recording, right? I mean, you've always been out, relevant, and doing stuff.
Well, it was in the book, I kind of go through the low point of my life, you know, and there was a point where, well, it was in the 70s, you know, I was frustrated. I'd been promised and then rejected and promised and rejected, and it seemed to be a pattern. It seemed like God wanted to just, you know, forge me into some kind of sort. I don't know what his plan for me was at that point, but all had kind of fallen in, you know, caved in. And I asked my father if I should just give up the dream and come home. And he said, "No, you have to stay the course. You know, the blessing's right beyond this battle." And boy, was he ever right, because if I would have come home, nothing would have transpired. He was very prophetic, a very spiritual man, loved God, loved Jesus Christ, and led me to Christ at an early age, you know, and so I believed him, you know, and his words for me was, "John, don't stop believing." So, you know, being a good son, I wrote it down in my lyric book and kept it with me whenever I got discouraged. You know, I'd look at it and Dad said, then I got to Journey, and you know, everything was always a stepping stone for my father until I got in Journey. It was immediately recognized that I had landed something, you know, and when I looked at what he had said in San Francisco that evening, I realized I was looking at a Journey song. This is a legitimate title, The Journey Should Sing. And I had Steve's voice in my head, and I wrote this chorus, kind of soaring chorus, and brought it into rehearsal. And then Neil and Steve had at it. We wrote the rest of it rather quickly in an afternoon. And the following day was the lyrics, and there it was, you know. You know, Steve and I had both been the singer in the smoky room. We'd been through the club scene, and we weren't as lucky as Neil, who, you know, joined Santana at 16. We had to pay our dues, so to speak, and it felt like Sunset Boulevard, where I had just been living in Laurel Canyon. We were lucky enough to get a house there and rent a house, and it just, to me, it seemed like there was a train track thing that Neil was doing, and of course, he came up with the bass line and some of the middle chords, and we kind of just were pin the tail on the donkey, you know, flying in the dark. And I shared with Steve the story about, you know, going down on Friday nights and watching the menagerie of hustlers and dreamers on the Sunset Boulevard. And he totally related. And we wrote the lyric pretty much, you know, from that viewpoint of being on the outside of the business looking in. Ironically, it was our biggest song. I guess that's just standing humble in your success. I don't know what it is, but we did something pretty right that day, you know. We did.
We should mention that the book is dedicated to your father, Leonard, and he's mentioned a lot throughout these pages.
Well, he was my mentor, my hero, the icon of my life. I mean, he was really a vision keeper. I was so blessed to have a father that recognized a uniqueness about me and music and, you know, just kind of led me there, you know. I hope it fires up dads to look for the unique gift that their child has and encourage that and nurture that, recognize it, and sort of get a path for them, you know, like my father did for me. I think I was very lucky that, you know, because he could have said, oh, that music business, you'll just end up with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Forget it, you know. Not for my son, you know. And really wasn't the case at all with my dad, you know.
The tour that you're on now with Def Leppard, what is that like? It's a 58-city tour. You're coming to Albany. What is that like now to be with this group for so long and still to have that fan base, some of it new, some of it quite old, and to come in and hear these hits once again?
It's great. It's we both share one thing in common. We wrote some pretty memorable songs. You know, we had the hits when we needed the hits. We came up with them. They went, you know, pretty popular. Probably the bands together represent over 200 million units sold. We both hit when we were relevant. I think both bands, you know, they followed us. I remember seeing them in Honolulu at the Blaisdell Arena. They were playing the next night, their first album. And I actually stayed over to see them and hang out with them and meet them. They're lovely lads. They're great guys. 12 years ago, we had a great time touring with them and played golf with Rick and look forward to playing golf with Rick again. And I don't think much has changed. We respect each other's music. And, you know, I knew they were onto something back in those days before Hysteria, you know. They had a great sound and I wish them well. And it'll be great to return to the stage with them once again, sharing the headline spot.
You write in the book that 25 years after joining Journey, I could see how staggeringly powerful the songs had turned out to be. They'd become the soundtrack of people's lives. The songs were bigger than anybody and everybody in the band. Like perennial flowers, the songs continued to bloom. And that could be said about so many of the hits of the band. There have been different incarnations of the band, but the songs always remain the same, and I guess that's what is the glue that keeps bringing, well, brings new people to the band, but also brings people back to see you.
Exactly. You know, it was a good roadmap. When I joined the band, I knew the character that, and the sort of principles that, you know, were involved in, you know, the magic of a great Journey song. And it was always about love, hope, and, you know, understanding something in life. You know, we stayed away from the other side of the rock spectrum, you know, and we stayed in the light, you know, and we got criticized for being, you know, mom and pop's favorite band and, you know, never really being the alternative. You know, the GQ wrote a story about us and, you know what, it served us well. And, you know, we weren't never meant to do anything but what we did. And so when I joined, I saw where we were going with it. Of course, being in the Babies, I watched Journey perform a whole tour, you know, every night. So I kind of knew what we needed to add, and it wasn't much. And they wanted to just, you know, change a few things, and so we did, and the rest is history.
Do you have a sense as to what allowed you to stay with the group so long? Other people went, you didn't.
Because, you know, I'm a team player. Baseball was a big part of my life growing up, and I learned to win and I learned to lose, you know, but I learned to be a team player. And I knew from the start that the trust and brotherhood that they offered me at the first year in the band, you know, they just were like, we're going to make you a full member. It was very flattering. And, you know, it was an honor to be have that mantle put on you, so to speak. And I realized it was serious business. And my father had prophesied that for my whole life to be in a great situation with a bunch of great guys, and I realized that this was truly, really far bigger than any one of us. And when the band kind of disbanded for a while, and you know, Neil Sean came knocking on my studio door. I built a studio by my house, standalone, and he said, "I need my voice back. I want to play guitar and Journey again." You know, and I helped him. I just like was like, "Yeah, you should have the band." And you know, the first thing we did was call Steve. Of course, it's all in the book. I go into great detail about, you know, how tough these decisions were moving forward. They weren't easy decisions, you know. There was a lot of anxiety that went with them. And, you know, we were doing something, you know, against the grain a lot of times. But We felt like the music was bigger than us. And that Neil and I, you know, had two-thirds of the catalog. We had worked so hard, you know, to build. And we just come off a platinum album. And, I mean, three platinum albums with these guys. So I'm going to stick to where, you know, I've been productive. And once you birth these songs, they become part of you. The fans become part of you. And their love for the music becomes a part of you. And that's why I feel like, you know, I represent that era.
It isn't easy being in a band, though, is it? I mean, you hear all these stories of bands that have been around for a long time, and it's not easy.
It's a changing thing. It's a daily thing. It's like being in a business. Feelings change, moods change. People get, you know, discouraged, frustrated. They feel like they're not understood. And that's, I guess, you know, to communicate it all and get it all on the table is the best, you know, way to do it. Just have band meetings and air it out, you know. And we try to do that as much as we can.
But at the end of the day, it's still fun for you.
It's still fun. Yeah. Why would it not be? I mean, again, these songs are part of my legacy as a songwriter and a band member. I would be crazy to, you know, say I'm going to walk away from all this when it's still relevant right now. And we're still, you know, selling stadiums. And you have to realize that, you know, this is what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, what comes with that is an added interest. And so this tour, we get to show why we deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That would be what my father would say. Go show them why you were inducted into the Hall of Fame. Go show them. Show them, John. And that's what I plan on doing all summer.
Well, you'll be showing them tomorrow night at the Times Union Center here in Albany, New York at 7 o'clock. You'll be performing with Def Leppard, and the summer tour is around the country this year. The brand new book that Jonathan has written is called Don't Stop Believin'. It is out from Zondervan. Jonathan Cain, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for spending time with us. Have a great time in Albany, and have a great time on the road this summer.
Well, we always look forward to playing in Albany. I know Bad English was almost a house band there. We played at plenty of places there, and we look forward to rocking with the Def Leppard guys. Thanks so much, Joe.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Take care. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Again, the name of the book is Don't Stop Believin' by Jonathan Cain. It's published by Zondervan. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.